Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The volume's been turned up on the abortion debate. It's always been high since the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court ruling of four decades ago, but recent GOP election results have given new momentum to the pro-life cause and its supporters. Tens of thousands of them turned out for the March for Life demonstration in Washington last month. We talked about it with participants who agreed with Vice President Pence, who told the crowd the tide has turned in the abortion debate. With me in studio with their side of the discussion is Mary Kogut, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood of the St. Louis region in southwest Missouri. It provides reproductive health care services. Katie Tannehill is with us in studio. She has had an abortion. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Mary Kogut, let me start with you. Is Vice President Pence correct? Has the tide turned on this issue?
I don't think it has. I think from everything we know from polls that have been done, and there have been many done in the last 6 to 8 months, about 19 national polls, as well as many state polls, and they've shown that the American public still believes that abortion should be safe and it should be legal. And they also believe that Planned Parenthood should stay in funded programs like Medicaid and Title X.
For the record, how many Planned Parenthood facilities are there in Missouri?
So we have 8 health centers that we have in Missouri, and then Planned Parenthood of Greater Plains has about 5 health centers in Missouri.
And how many of those provide abortions?
One. Right now, we have one center here in St. Louis. It is the only state-licensed abortion care provider for the entire state of Missouri.
Do you think Planned Parenthood is either misunderstood or mischaracterized?
I think there's both. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to set the record straight today. I'd like to talk a little bit about who we are and what we do. Mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood is part of a national organization that just celebrated 100 years. The affiliate here in St. Louis is celebrating 85 years this year. And the services that we provide, most of our care, 90% of our care or greater, is prevention services. Don, these are non-abortion-related services. Birth control, that's our number one. Sexually transmitted infection testing and treatment, number two. Pap smears, pelvic exams, breast exams. This is primarily what we provide. And we also provide care for not just women, but for men. We do provide abortion. We're proud of our abortion services, and we won't back down from providing that. But it's not the vast majority of our care.
Where does the situation stand right now with regard to the potential for defunding nationally and also with regard to Missouri?
Sure. So one thing I would want to say is we have many challenges right now. We're in a position that's very tenuous. We're concerned. We're concerned about funding. The term defunding is a little bit of a misnomer. What this is, Planned Parenthood receives Medicaid just like every other provider that's in the Medicaid program. So just like a private doctor or another health center would, we provide care. We send in a bill under CPT codes. We get reimbursed for the care, and then we apply that reimbursement to the cost of our services that we already provided for patients. So it's an insurance plan. And the insurance plan covers low-income women, rural women, and women of color. These are the ones who will be most hurt and most impacted if Planned Parenthood is removed from funding. So when you ask about where does it stand, I don't know. There could be politicians that do consider moving this forward. What we do know from the American public is that 7 out of every 10 American says Planned Parenthood should stay in these programs that were a very important part of the healthcare safety network.
So, but if there is, I want to be sure I'm clear on this. If there is a defunding process, and there is here in the state of Missouri the loss of Medicare funds, needless to say, what does that do to your operation? What does it do to the other services that you provide?
Sure. Here's our commitment, and here's our plan. We're going to keep our doors open, and we're going to keep them open every day. That's exactly what we're going to do, and it's the promise we're making to our patients and to our community. We will take a loss in the government funding of a certain amount that we will have to figure out. And this isn't – let me re-explain that. We're not going to take a loss because all of a sudden the money just goes away, we're not going to be able to serve these patients that are so important to us. That's what's going to happen, and that's what our concern is, that 6,000 to 7,000 patients all of a sudden may not be able to come to us because we can't accept Medicaid. And so we want to figure out, how do we raise funds so that we can open our doors to those 6,000 to 7,000 patients so they can continue to choose Planned Parenthood as their provider and get the expert care they've been used to getting.
All right. Let me turn to Katie for a moment here. Katie, as someone who has had an abortion, not through Planned Parenthood, we should point out.
Yes.
But what do you make of all of this? What do you make of this debate? And then we'll ask of the circumstances of your situation.
Sure. Well, you know, coming from my standpoint, it's a little concerning to me that they're trying to take away a right that should be for every woman, regardless of political beliefs or religious beliefs. It's a little scary that some women don't know where to turn just to get a pap smear, not necessarily abortion services, to get some cancer screenings, and men as well. I mean, it's extremely important.
What were the circumstances, if I may ask, and if you care to tell us,
sure,
of your decision to have an abortion?
Sure. So we went in for our 20-week anatomy scan, and our doctor, our normal OB-GYN, noticed that there was something a little fishy on that ultrasound. So she explained to me that our son looked like he may have some spina bifida and that we needed to go right away and get it checked out at a level 2 facility. So we headed right over to Mercy Hospital. They did a couple more ultrasounds that were about 2 hours long. And they decided that not only did he have the most severe form of spina bifida, but that it was inoperable, that there was nowhere for us to be referred to, that he could have surgery on it, and that he was already paralyzed from the waist down, among other things. So at that point, a perinatologist came in and let us know that there was somewhere else that I would need to get a second opinion, that they could offer us services that were not offered through Mercy Hospital.
This required by law?
Yes, this was required by law. So this was all on a Friday. I had to wait until the following Monday to get in to see someone. So we were referred. I met with that doctor. They actually had the doctor do the ultrasound this time, not just an ultrasound tech. She told me that they are confirming and they agree with everything that the original two doctors had found, and that they found more, that our son's brain was being pulled through his skull, that he was already severely brain damaged. He had a ton of fluid on his brain, and that his prognosis for life was not good. It was pretty much a 0% chance of life. So at that point, my husband and I together decided that we were not going to allow our son to suffer. We would basically be forcing him to be born for our own selfish reasons. And that's not how we want to raise our family. That's not how we want to be as parents. All parents, I think, want the best thing for their children. So we thought the best thing for him was to end his life knowing only love, and that we did it with the most compassion in our heart. And we know that we did the best ultimate thing we could do for him.
Obviously, it had to be an agonizing decision. But what impact did the wait, the fact that you had to wait 72 hours, have on you and your husband?
Sure. So as soon as we decided that we were going to go ahead with our medical termination, we had to sign some paperwork that stated that we had seen his heartbeat, we had heard it, and that we had seen him on ultrasound. Basically, signing this paperwork gave us that 72-hour waiting period. So that going home with that 72-hour waiting period was utter agony. I mean, I could feel my son wiggling around, not necessarily as active as a normal baby his gestational size, because he was, again, paralyzed already. So it was agonizing, those 72 hours. Am I making the best decision for him? Is this what we want to do? Are we sure we're doing the best thing? I can still feel him. Are they sure? Are they right? You know, so many questions that were unanswered. But at the end of the day, again, we did not want him to suffer for a second of his life, and he would have.
Mary Kogut, this really tells us something about the impact of various kinds of restrictions, the delay that Katie had and the doctors that she had to see and that sort of thing. What is your take on restrictions here?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Katie for telling her story.
Absolutely.
I think it takes amazing courage. And what we do find is that every woman has a story. And the women who come to us each have their own stories. And we feel very strongly it's critical to offer full support and full information to every person, but allow them to make the decision that's best for them and for their family, mm-hmm. and not impose others' values on them. You know, it's interesting. 60% of the women who choose to have abortions are already mothers. And so they understand the implications of the decision that they're making. It's sad that we have the restrictions we do, and we have a number of them in Missouri. And in fact, we and the other Planned Parenthood are challenging two of them right now. We're challenging the restriction that you have to be an ambulatory surgical center to provide abortions. And we're also challenging that you need doctor privileging within a certain amount of miles from the center. These are both restrictions that were found to be unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in the most recent decision in June of 2016, Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstad. We have them in Missouri. We believe they are not constitutional. We believe they are medically unnecessary. And they're here only to reduce access for women to a constitutionally protected right to choose an abortion.
You know, there are many elements to this. Did you want to say something, Katie? I noticed you.
No, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that my husband and I do have two living children. We lost Jonah in between those two living children, so that's absolutely correct. And most women that I know have living children that chose to have an abortion, mm-hmm. but a good number that I know of do.
There are many elements to this debate, obviously. You can come at it from many different angles. But Mary Kogut, the bottom line is, and those who are pro-life are simply going to say in every case, you are taking a human life. I mean, how do you respond to that? I mean, in fact, isn't it?
So there are some people who believe that. There are some religions that do. There are religions and science that disagree about when life begins, about whether or not abortion is morally okay or not. And what we do know through Roe v. Wade is that abortion right now is a protected right up to viability, which is about 24 weeks at this time. Don, most abortions, about 90%, are within the first 13 weeks. So they're early. And they're getting to be even earlier because of things like abortion by pill, which can be done up to 10 weeks of pregnancy, and the fact that women understand and are able to make decisions earlier. We also know that there are very few abortions that are done late, after 20 weeks, and the vast majority of them are because of fetal anomalies, cases like Katie's, where a wanted pregnancy has gone terribly wrong. And we cannot put barriers and restrictions in front of women and families who are making the most healthy and best decision for them.
But there are exceptions that are provided in the law, particularly with regard to the health and well-being of the mother. So that is kind of attended to in most legislation that's out there.
I think one of the concerns is that while Roe v. Wade has been upheld and Whole Woman's Health versus Hellerstad further reinforced it, there has been a gradual whittling away of abortion rights. And this is a very strong concern for us. I think there are a couple things that are really good that we need to share. One, teen pregnancy is at the lowest rate it's been in 20 years. And the reason is birth control. Teens are using birth control more often, they're using it better, and they're using multiple forms of birth control. The other thing is the rate of abortion is at the lowest rate it's been since about 1974. Why? Because birth control is out there. There are better methods of birth control, including long-acting devices like IUDs and implants. And the one thing I want to be so clear about, Planned Parenthood's business primarily is birth control. It's what we do. It's what we started with. It's what we're going to keep on doing for the next 100 years. Birth control is the solution. Planned Parenthood is the solution. I feel very strongly about that.
Katie, if I can come back to you with regard to this, and it may be very difficult for you to answer. If you don't want to, I understand.
Sure.
With regard to the question I raised about the fact that we're dealing with a life.
Yeah. So my husband and I, again, we made this very, very heartbreaking decision together. And our view on it is it would be no different, again, if we chose to birth him and keep him alive on a ventilator, because that's what it would have been, with no brain function, and then choosing to have to take him off life support. In this instant, my body was the quote-unquote machine, and we chose to take him off sooner so he wouldn't feel an ounce of pain or sticking with needles or a vent tube being shoved down his throat, all of those things. So, you know, it's just
you're
getting hard.
Well, yeah, I understand. Your situation's somewhat different, though, given, you know, the quality, the viability of the fetus. So it's in essence, a legal abortion. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're trying to take that away right now. There are women who have trisomy diagnoses that they're trying to overturn that so that they're not able to make that choice for Down syndrome, knowing the life that their children will lead with that diagnosis. They're trying to take that right away from those women. So that's why I'm here today.
Right.
Don, I appreciate that Katie brought that up, because it is true. Not every politician nor every piece of legislation that's being proposed nationwide leaves exceptions for a woman. So I do think we have people who are very extreme in what they're trying to do in taking away access for women. And again, the American public overwhelmingly believes Roe v. Wade should be supported and that abortion should be safe and legal.
Concerning Roe v. Wade, let me bring in a caller who has been waiting and wants to talk about that. Scott joins us from Chesterfield. Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think she might have mentioned it, but the recent Supreme Court decision, it was 5-3 overturning the Texas law, which pretended not to be a pro-life law. In other words, they lied, you know, saying it was about a woman's health, you know, and I don't know if that's justified, but that's what they did. But anyway, the Roe was upheld 5-3, so even if Scalia was alive, I think this guy that Trump just appointed, you know, he doesn't have a record on abortion. And there's some question about, you know, is he more like Scalia or is he more like Kennedy? You know, and so basically, I don't think the Republicans, I think they're basically just using the pro-life voters, and they're never going to deliver, at least not on overturning Roe. And the pro-life people, some of them are too naive to realize that, you know, but they need a new strategy.
All right, Scott, thank you for the call. I think most people on both sides of this issue are awaiting, you know, what's going to happen with the Supreme Court. But the Texas law that was overturned, is Missouri law very much like that, isn't it?
Very similar.
Yeah.
And the one thing that was so critical, I think, about the Supreme Court ruling was that it was very clear politicians and legislators can't just develop proposals and bills that are meant to prevent access to abortion. They have to be medically necessary. And the restrictions that they found unconstitutional, the privileging and the ambulatory surgical regs, were found to be medically unnecessary. And this is exactly what we've got here in Missouri, and it's why we're challenging current Missouri law.
What are the current Missouri restrictions, and there are a number of them, what is it going to mean for hospitals where abortions are provided?
I'm not sure I can answer that. We aren't a hospital, so I feel unqualified to give you an opinion about that. But I think everyone's looking very carefully right now at what the current laws are and also what the new proposals are. We've got about 29 pieces of legislation right now that are anti-reproductive health care at this time. They may not all move, but we're watching.
And Katie, you are among those watching very, very closely. Are you involved? I mean, you've gone through this experience, and obviously you're coming forward to mm-hmm. tell your story because you have a point of view. Are you involved at all in this debate beyond just speaking out as you are?
You know, I'm trying to get more and more involved. As Mary and I were talking before we came on today, I hope to soon be giving testimony to some legislators in Jeff City as soon as I can. As soon as they can get me out there, I hope to be helpful that way.
Mary, are you familiar with the situation in Illinois and how that may or may not differ from Missouri?
So Illinois is a little bit less restrictive in their laws around abortion. I can give you one very clear example. We're able to provide medication abortion, which is abortion by pills, in Illinois under a nurse practitioner, under advanced practice nurses. In Missouri, it has to be with a doctor. And there's no really medical reason why it has to be with a physician. So that just gives you one idea how it's different. And they do have a bit different regulations around ambulatory surgical regulations.
Mm-hmm. I know that there is an event planned for this weekend, not sponsored by Planned Parenthood, but in which you will be a participant. What is going on and where?
Sure. What's very, very interesting during this whole political cycle and during all of the information right now that's going on around reproductive rights and reproductive health care is that people are coming out and they're speaking up. You know, just a few weeks ago, we had millions of people worldwide showing up for the Women's March. And Don, this was about reproductive health care and it was about Planned Parenthood, but it was also about all the issues that we care about, issues that are impacting our patients, our families, people we just sincerely care about. So what's happened this weekend is there's a group of people who started something on social media. It was a single woman who started it. She got 4,000 people who said they want to come out and support Planned Parenthood in a silent march in front of our building. And it's not just us. They want to support the patients that we're caring for. And that's who's at the core of this entire discussion.
I should point out that you mentioned the Women's March, and it was certainly well attended. But there was another march at approximately the same time, the March for Life, which was also very well attended.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that the interesting thing about the Women's March was how diverse the people were who showed. And how I think the giant has been wakened, and people are very concerned, and they want to ensure that we don't back down, that we don't lose rights, that we continue to have our freedoms, including women's health.
And Katie, you'll be involved in the Saturday march?
Absolutely. My son and I and my sister, we all did the women's march already, and we plan on being there this weekend as well.
All righty. Well, that's something we'll be looking forward to seeing, the turnout and the response that that gets. Mary Kogut of Planned Parenthood, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Pleasure to talk to you and Katie Tannehill. Thank you for sharing your story. I know it's
thank
not
you.
Easy, and we appreciate your coming forward like this to help us help people understand what this is all about.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Mary
thank
and
you.
Katie. Thank you.
You.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.